All right. Good morning. This podcast is brought to you by HTS. HTS is your local technology expert serving Delaware for 16 years. HTS specializes in TV installations, home automations, Sonos audio systems, security cameras, and Wi-Fi networks. For all of your home and business tech needs, give them a call 1-800-690-2029 or visit them at htsav.net. 3, 2, 1. Good morning. Good Monday morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good.
Doug James back in the house.
Again. This time I'll do it right.
Yeah. Or, yeah.
I'm an old pro now, so, you know.
Well, if you were, then you'd actually be talking into the mic.
Oh, am I supposed to? Is that better?
Pull the mic up.
Pull the mic. Okay.
All pro.
Like there. Well, all right.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't want to get, it's the age of COVID. I don't want to get too close to this thing. I don't know it very well.
Well, don't, you know, don't kiss it.
Okay, I'll try not.
Hopefully nobody's had COVID has been in the studio.
Well, probably not, you know. But you don't know where the mic's been when you're not here.
This is true. I do not know, but I'm crossing my fingers it hasn't been done anything badly. It is a Monday morning, a real change in the weather. I'm actually pleasantly surprised with this weather. How about you?
Yeah. I mean, with the whole, this is the leftover hurricane. Yeah. So who knows?
I don't even know what this one was named. What was the name of this one?
This one was the Greek alphabet thing. It was the D, what is it? Delta or something like that, are they calling it?
I can't even keep up with them.
Something, there's
so
many
of them. I know
that
it hit, was it Lake Charles, Louisiana, that it hit it twice. I mean, they got hit twice.
Yeah. Well, there was the last one just, a few weeks ago.
6 weeks.
6 weeks ago. And they aren't even beginning to clean up from that, and they're now hit again. So,
right.
You know.
Well, we're very lucky. We live on the coast. I mean, we could be hit by a hurricane just like the rest of us, but we've somehow been lucky, thank God.
Yeah, we have been really lucky. Yeah.
I don't know a couple of years ago, I think we had a pretty good one, Sandy, or they always look worse than they, for some reason when we get hit here, it's never, luckily, cross our fingers or knock on wood, it's not been so bad,
right. I think it's all geographic location. I think we're just in the right spot. We're just north enough.
Yeah.
That when they come up the Gulf and then they cut over, it just always misses us. But, you know.
Well, there was one that came right into us. And actually, I felt like, because I remember we went north up to Milford and stayed because of we were worried. And Milford got whacked worse than like Rehoboth did. It was crazy.
Right.
Somehow there's like this, I felt like there was like, I don't know if, you know, whatever happens with the weather patterns, but right over the beach, it seemed to kind of spare the coast a little bit more. I don't know. It was left a lot of room for wonder. What's going on with
Harry
these things.
Harry Potter probably lives here somewhere, and he's put some protective spell over the area.
Exactly.
That's probably the
most logical
explanation.
I will take this weather. I was just, I was talking with somebody this morning. I love this time of year. I love this kind of storms, this grayness.
Oh, yeah, I do too.
Summer.
Yeah, I think the fall is really cool. It's not so hot. No.
Summer's a little exhausting.
Yeah.
And I feel like I think it was Saturday. It was so nice, obviously, and so many people were here, and I was just like, ugh! I was like at the end of my fuse for some reason, the end of my summer fuse, and I just was like, go home! But then I kind of realized that, what I realized at that moment was that most of the license plates were from Delaware.
Oh,
yeah,
that's cool.
Well, no, that means they won't be going.
Oh, that's true. Well, maybe they'll just go home and stay in their houses more, you know.
Well, and I saw that was it New Jersey and Connecticut, and basically everybody around us has kind of their COVID cases have kind of risen over the weekend, and I thought, well, maybe everybody just went home.
Right, that could be. That could be.
They all left Delaware, because Delaware's fine, but Jersey, Pennsylvania, everybody around us went home. So
yeah.
Or their numbers
well,
went
Delaware
up.
Has had a little rise, but it's not in our immediate area mostly. I think it's mostly in the Wilmington area and stuff like that that's had the rise. At one point, it was more the Georgetown area, I think.
Well, I just, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it.
I know.
It used to be, you know, you got COVID and it was like the kiss of death. And now it's like, oh, I've tested positive for COVID-19. All right, go home for 10 days. We'll see you back here.
Right.
What happened to dying?
Well, they're still dying. They're just not. It's like a friend of mine in New York is still there. He's been there the whole time. He's in our old neighborhood, the Upper West Side. Mm-hmm. And even through like April and May and June, when you know, New York was just having, they were having to bring freezer trucks in to hold the bodies. They were just dying so much. And at one point he said, well, I don't get it. I don't see anybody. It doesn't seem, other than New York seems kind of empty, I don't see anything. And I said, well, of course you don't see anything. You're not living next door to the hospital. Right. You know, you're not, there aren't bodies on the street.
Yep.
Fortunately, it's not quite that bad. If we get to bodies on the street, then we are really screwed. We are really totally screwed. But the, you know, I think a lot of people just have a hard time because even with, I always say that they say, well, the average flu season kills 20 to 30,000 people if it's pretty bad, you know.
Right.
And we're already, it hasn't been a year. It's only the middle of October. This started in, say, February, March. So it hasn't been a year, and it's already killed 214,000 people.
Yeah.
It's just that we don't see them dying. You know, we see clips on the news that seem distant. You know, it's like watching a movie. We've seen so many movies with scenes like that. It doesn't seem real to us. So I think, you know, even I said to him, and he's a really, really smart guy, but I said to him, you know, well, you're not next door to the hospital. You're not going to see anything. None of us are going to see it unless we get sick and have to go to the hospital. Then it'll probably be a horrific realization. But the weird thing about the COVID thing, I think, is that it's become this bizarre multi-faceted disease. We're used to something like the flu, for the most part, you get it, you feel sick, you get over it. That is with, you know, if you have cancer, you get it, and you a good chance you won't get over it. This is, we just don't understand the fact that some people can get it, and it's like they have a cold, and then they get better, and they're fine. And yet a lot of other people get it, and they're horrifically ill and then dead. And other people get it, and they're pretty ill, and then they never really get over it. They're ill and have symptoms for months. And we don't understand that yet.
I think that it was definitely a couple different strains of it. There was like the West Coast strain and the East Coast strain. I think the West Coast strain was from China.
Yeah.
And I think the East Coast strain was more from Europe.
Right.
And
well,
maybe,
it all mutates over time.
It does.
As it goes through people, it starts mutating and it starts mutating. And they even said that probably it all originated, you know, they think it all originated in China, and not to any fault of theirs. They created it, could have just as easily originated here and we sent it out somewhere. And then it went to Europe and mutated, and then it went to, you know, it's been kind of going all over and mutating and doing what it does. So,
well, then it would make sense to me that I could actually have it for a day and then not have it. And then maybe 3 days later have it again for a little bit, part of the day.
Right.
It's just
that
crazy.
Or you have it and you have symptoms for a day and then the symptoms back off, and then you have the symptoms flare back up, and the symptoms could be, it's like, as someone was saying, I saw somebody posted something about Herman Cain, you know, the black Republican gentleman who passed away.
Right.
And they said, you know, he was at the Republican convention, you know, feeling fine. And it was like within, I think, a week or two, he started having symptoms. And they said it was about 22 days from him first being diagnosed to him dying.
Yeah.
But they went through that 22 days, and they said after week one, they said he feels great. He's fine. They think he's over it. Then, like, week two, he still felt pretty good. Week three, he started feeling bad again, and within a few days of him feeling bad again, he was suddenly dead.
Wow.
So the whole idea of, you know, it's a little, we can't even say, well, I've had it and now I feel good and so I'm over it.
Well,
you still have to be careful because it's, you know.
Yeah, it's a real, it definitely puts a cramp in our style.
Oh, it sure does. It does make sense that people who are a little older, people who have health conditions, of course, as in any disease, you have some kind of health condition, your body's going to be a little bit weaker, your immune system isn't quite up to snuff, and it can't deal with, you know, the virus. And depending on what strain you got, or, you know, we still don't know. It's you know, we haven't even lived with this disease for a year yet, so.
Well, I've had a couple, like I ran Sunday, and man, I felt great. Just we ran the beach, and I did 4 miles, and I was just so fast, you know.
Wow.
Full of air and just ready to. And then I ran a couple days later, and I was struggling with my breath. I'm like, you know, like, mm-hmm. you know, Jesus, what's going on? And this has mm-hmm. happened to me a few times
sure.
throughout this since March. I mean, it was probably a couple weeks, maybe beginning of April, and I had gone for a run, and I remember it's like I was having trouble kind of catching my breath,
right?
But
right.
still running 5 miles. So it's
right.
it's I don't know.
Well,
what's
I think
going
we.
On.
You know, that all, because that happens to me all the time. I'll
right.
go to the gym and I'll be like, wow, I feel great. I'm doing this. I was on the treadmill for an hour and I feel great. And 2 days later, I can go back to the gym and I can do half of what I did before and I'm exhausted. And there's so many little things that affect us just in our normal lives without even COVID. Don't even think about COVID, you know,
right.
just normally. And it could be your blood sugar's a little low, or you didn't get quite the good night's sleep you got the night before. You could be, you know, there could be a lot of little things that will affect that. And normal, I think, is up and down.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I mean, I don't really, up until this, I don't pay attention really to myself. I mean,
sure.
I do, but I don't. You know, I know people
right.
that are like, oh, wow, I remember when I ate this at 12 o'clock on Thursday, and I remember on Friday
I had this
kind of poop, and you're like, wow, you really pay attention to all this stuff?
I took a picture of it, and I posted it just to see if everyone else thought it was normal, too.
Yeah, and I'm like, I don't pay attention. And then I start feeling, like, a little bad. Like, oh, do I not care about myself?
Right, right.
So I feel like during this whole thing, I've really, maybe out of paranoia or fear, I've been paying attention a little bit more to how I breathe,
how
I breathe at night, how I feel. And I can tell you that it is weird. You know, these masks have prevented us, not only for, at least for me, hopefully not catching COVID, but I haven't caught anything else either.
Right.
Like, I haven't even had a cold.
Absolutely.
I haven't had anything.
Yeah, people don't realize that, you know, the benefit of masks is not just COVID. It's colds, flus, even allergies.
Yeah.
You know, the mask will keep out pollen and stuff.
Right.
You know, it keeps out all that stuff that normally make us, especially respiratory things.
Yeah.
You know, it helps with all of that.
Well, I don't, you know, I know we have a built-in defense. I don't want to, you know.
Right, right.
I don't want that to take a nap on us. I want it to stay
strong.
Well,
I think you'd need more than, you know, I think especially respiratory things, I think, are things that get into your lungs and stuff like that. And
yeah.
I think the immune system is if you can help it out anytime you can, I think it's always good.
Well, I wanted to, I love chatting with you because honestly, I mean, listen, I'm about talked out on COVID. We've
know,
gone on every angle. We've analyzed it to death.
I know.
I want to talk about Saturday Night Live.
Okay.
And so the season, and I didn't know this. So was this weekend the second episode
of
the second episode of the season?
And from what I understand, and like I said before, I'm not there for these first five shows.
Right.
And and we'll see about the rest of it. I'm technically supposed to be sort of retired.
Right.
But I'm in touch with all my friends there and stuff like that. So I knew, and my boss, who's fantastic, called me or texted me and just said, you know, we're starting. We're doing five shows in a row. We want to get shows in before the election. We're doing five in a row. And you know, we're trying our best to see if we can do stuff that's that's safe, you know, do some social distancing, do lots of testing of people that are there, lighten up the workspaces and stuff like that. And he said, like I was saying earlier, normally our little room that we work in doing all the making costumes, altering costumes and stuff like that, little small windowless room, and there are normally as many as 8 of us packed into this room all working together for 12, 14 hours
straight.
Yeah,
that doesn't sound healthy.
That's not really healthy. And they said that that room has now been approved for a total of 2 people at any given time. That if anybody else comes into the room, one of the people already there has to leave. So to that point. So my other thought was, you know, I'm on the verge of retiring. I'm already getting my pension. They're fantastic people that work there, and I don't want to be that guy that comes in just because I have a little seniority and say, well, I'm going to work, and then someone else can't.
Right.
You know?
No, I understand.
So on a lot of levels, I thought this is, I'll watch the show and be supportive from a distance.
Well, maybe you can help me clarify some stuff because for...
Sure.
I didn't really...
If I can.
I know. We'll just chat about it.
I didn't
really pay attention to the fact that the season was starting...
Right,
because
I
just assumed that it wasn't going to, but then
a little last minute.
Yeah,
a little bit.
But this is it. This is what you guys are, you know, the folks over there are waiting for. This is that time of year the 4 weeks before the election.
Yeah,
it's all. I mean, and Trump is really he must provide a ton of material.
He does. He really, really does.
But what I wanted to ask you about is what's up with Jim Carrey.
Oh, see, now Jim Carrey is a whole new element that happened without my being there.
Right.
So I'm not there, and I haven't had a really real chance to talk to people, but it makes sense to me because if you think about it, before Trump was elected, we had Trump, of course, has been he's not really a businessman. He's not really a politician. He's a performer.
Yep.
He only is he's made all his success from The Apprentice.
Yeah.
On NBC, I'm sorry to say our network. My network.
You did this.
So I did this. I feel so ashamed. So I've been around him several times. I've, you know, not officially met him,
right?
Because they're very protective, especially lately. In the early days, they weren't quite so protective of the stars and the hosts and things like that. And I would have fittings with lots of people and chat with them and stuff like that. They were of course particularly protective of him. And so he's really a more of a celebrity. And when he was just a celebrity, Daryl Hammond, our cast member, did Trump. And I dressed Daryl Hammond the whole 11 years that he was there. And so I was always doing his Trump tie or his Chris Matthews tie or his, you know, whatever. He was always doing politicians. And he did Trump. And he did a great, everybody loved his Trump. As a matter of fact, he told me that Trump loved his Trump. And he actually rather liked Donald Trump. They met several times, I think. And Daryl, I think on a certain level, just being a performer, and Daryl is amazingly dedicated to his impressions and things like that. He would... all day during the show, he would have a little tiny tape recorder, and he would listen to tapes of whoever he was doing constantly. No, just up and down the halls, even as I'm dressing him, he's pushing the button and listening to, if he was doing Donald Trump, he'd listen to Donald Trump talking, just so that he would have the voice absolutely down. So he would have every little inflection. So on a certain level...
Well, and Trump is a lot... He's a lot of voice, but he's a lot of other things. Hand gestures.
Yeah. Daryl felt like as long as he had the voice, if he had that voice, every inflection, every pause, every hesitation, every thing then, and he would watch videos of them too, but he said kind of, I think he felt like it started with the voice. And as long as he had the voice down, the mannerisms and everything else would come. But my point is that it was a very clinical impression of Donald Trump. Right. It wasn't meant to be flattering. It wasn't meant to be insulting. It wasn't meant to be anything other than you would recognize Donald Trump. And when he would do, like most of his impressions, I mean, he did an amazing Jesse Jackson and sounded just like Jesse Jackson. But
Daryl Hammond did?
Daryl, yeah. Daryl yeah. would do Jesse. It's one of his many, many people he did.
Well, you say he does the Don Pardo now, too, right?
Yeah, yeah. Daryl's now our, and I don't think a lot of people realize that. Daryl's now our, the announcer. When Don was like 90-something and was still doing the announcing from his home in Arizona,
right?
They would pick him up with a limo, drive him to a sound booth, and he would do the, you know, live from New York, it's Saturday Night Live. They could do some recorded bits of that. But, of course, for each new show, he'd have to say, starring the new host. Right. And then with musical guest, the new musical guest. So sometimes that's all they needed to do.
Well,
Jim Carrey.
Yeah, Jim Carrey. Is he on Saturday Night Live now?
No. He's like, we started doing, well, we've kind of always done that, but we're doing it more and more. Oh, my point was, originally, Daryl Hammond was our Donald Trump.
Right.
So he was Donald Trump. As soon as Donald Trump became a presidential candidate, I think they felt the stakes are bumped up. You know, we have, and this is, you know, this is not my having, you know, big long talks over a brandy snifter with Lauren.
Right.
This is just my observing from being there in wardrobe. But when Donald Trump was just a guy who we'd see, he was on The Apprentice, we'd see commercials for Trump Steaks, we'd see commercials for Trump University, we'd see commercials, you know, all of which are bankrupt and have been sued. we'd see, you know, all those things. So Donald Trump was a personality, and Daryl did an impression of him, like he did impressions of other personalities. As soon as Trump became a presidential candidate, the stakes were bumped way up.
I think Daryl Hammond did Clinton, too, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Daryl Hammond's big claim to fame was Clinton.
Yeah,
and I flew on a private jet with Daryl to go to Washington, where he did Clinton for I'm not sure what political party it was, but they were having a big dinner and they hired him to come and be Clinton. And we took a private jet and it was Daryl and one of the writers and his hair, makeup and wardrobe crew, you know, me being wardrobe and his hair person and his makeup person. And, cause he wore a prosthetic nose as Clinton. And so,
so maybe Jim Carrey's been brought in too, because I know
exactly.
he's playing Biden.
Yeah, yeah. Just as Alec Baldwin has been brought in to play Trump now, because
okay.
like I was saying, Lauren decided Trump's now the candidate. I need somebody he wanted a big star to be Trump now. Mm-hmm. So instead of bringing Daryl back and doing Trump and doing kind of a kinder, gentler Trump that Daryl would do, Alec does a broader, a little more
aggressive.
Yeah, but a little more cartoony version of it, where Daryl's is very almost, I don't know if this is the right word, scholarly version of
well,
Trump.
Well, and I think probably Daryl's version's a little more voice, and Alex is a little bit more of the other stuff, you know, the lips.
Yeah,
sticks his lips out, he does the hand gestures, the hair, it's a lot.
Exactly. That brings me to another point. So anyway, your question is Jim Carrey coming in? It's the same thing. He's brought in, he's only going to do Biden.
So probably for the next 5 weeks.
For the next 5 weeks.
4 weeks.
Or 4 weeks or anything. He's coming in to do Biden. I think Jim Carrey is Jim Carrey.
Carrey's amazing. And I saw him doing an impersonation of Biden, I guess it was last week's. And then with the fly landing on Pence's head over the week, now they morphed Jim Carrey down into a fly version of Biden, and that's who was landing on Pence's head.
And then Biden morphed into Jeff Goldblum, who did the fly movie.
Right.
And I kind of thought, you know, I'm getting this joke, but are the kids getting that? Are the 20-year-olds getting this joke?
You know what, though? Honestly, I thought the, and I know this doesn't have anything to do with you, but I thought it was really funny.
It was way off. I felt, I mean, the wardrobe guy thinks, but I thought the whole, because it was like a 20-minute cold opening, and I kind of felt like we're all sitting here waiting for the fly. We know the fly's coming. Mm-hmm. We're waiting for the fly. Get to the fly.
Get to the fly.
Let's just cut this other stuff.
Well, I don't even mean that. I just mean in general. Mm-hmm. I felt like there was a different tone. Like, so they did, and we talked about this the last time. We talked about Colonel Angus. The cork soakers. You know, there was an edgy time to Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah.
And I haven't been watching it that much in the past few years, so maybe the edginess has still continued. But what I saw the other night was very funny with Bill Burr. Bill Burr did his opening, and then they did the name change. They evacuated the people out of the courthouse that were there to get their names changed.
Oh, that was the Chris Rock show.
Was that 2 weeks ago?
That was 2 weeks ago. Okay. The name-changing sketch was Chris Rock 2 weeks ago.
That was funny.
That was very funny.
That
was in the old tradition of, well, you know where I think that wordplay, I'm not sure exactly if it started, but I think it started with the NPR Sweaty Balls sketch with Alec Baldwin.
There was a skit that was done. It was called The Tube Bar. And it was a skit. It was recorded on a cassette probably back in like 1990. And this guy was calling into a bar and asking for people like Al, Koholik, Ben, D-Banana, all these great names.
Right.
The funny part of the skit was that they kept saying the names, so-and-so wasn't able to change their name. But there's a real... There's a something about the accentuating the first part of the name, like alcoholic.
This
guy was saying alcoholic. He kept it very funny. If people haven't seen it, it was hilarious.
Yeah. Well, it's like the Sweaty Ball sketch. I remember when we first saw that, and they did it a couple times. We'd seen it through the tech rehearsals and through the, and every time we saw it, we were all rolling on the floor. Because it started with, it was Molly Shannon and Anna Gasteyer as the very deadpan, dry NPR ladies doing their very almost monotoned Delicious Dish show. Welcome to Delicious Dish.
Very quiet,
that NPR thing.
And thanks for joining.
And then starting to, talking to, and of course, we saw the visual of Alec Baldwin coming in with a big plate of meatballs. And his name was Al Schwede.
Al Schwede.
And he said, "Would you like to try my Schwede balls?"
Yeah.
Maybe, oh, they look delicious.
Yeah. Well, didn't they have Christmas? Wasn't that at like Christmas?
It was such a big hit that then the whole wordplay thing, really, they found because even Colonel Angus, I think, was kind of a grandchild of Sweaty Balls.
Well, I do. I always love a good wordplay. The one that, if you saw it, did you see it, what they were doing at the courthouse with the
name changing? Sure.
Those are beautiful.
What reminds me, I have a love for it because I, as a kid, you remember Mad Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
I loved Mad Magazine.
Absolutely.
And I remember there was it has to be a classic now, they did a high school yearbook issue, and the whole issue of Mad Magazine was as though it was a high school yearbook. And from the cover to the back was this, and every single, there must have been hundreds of names in it. And if you looked in the fine print, every single name was, like Harry P. Ness. And,
Harry P. Ness.
And, I.P. Daily. And, but every single one, hundreds of them, and you had to really look at the little tiny print under the fake old 1960s high school yearbook pictures, and the whole thing was
oh,
just
so
this
every
wordplay
person's
thing.
Picture had a
every
had an
person,
inappropriate
yes,
name.
They had, you know, here's the senior class and here's the junior class, and every single name listed was a wordplay name, and it was hundreds of them, and it was genius.
That's funny.
And I remember pouring it with a magnifying glass and laughing at every single name. Well, so it's that whole wordplay thing has been with us for generations.
I felt like, and I think we talked about this a little bit, I've kind of felt like, and I know Saturday Night Live goes through ups and downs.
Oh, sure.
I felt like they've kind of been, I don't want to say, because I don't watch it enough anymore to really give a good judgment, but it's been feeling to me more like it's coming to an end. Then it's being rejuvenated.
Right, right, right.
And what I watched the other night was very funny.
Yeah.
And then I had like this change. I felt a little like, oh my God, this is actually, maybe they got new writers, whatever it is, but there feels like a breath of fresh air that's coming in.
Right. Well, the writing team, it seems to me like there's always kind of a, basically, they have a if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing. If the show seems to be going well, then I think the people at the top really don't want anyone to leave or anything to change. But there's so many writers. There are lots and lots of writers. I think the head writers are kind of always there. Colin Jost, Michael Che, I think, is considered one of the head writers. But there's so many of them that a lot of the writers that are there come and go.
Yeah.
So there'll be some that there's always a little bit of a new feeling. And we go through, depending on who the writers are, we go through phases. I remember at one point there was a phase where one of the writers just loved superheroes. And we were constantly doing superhero sketches and having to do Superman costumes and Wonder Woman costumes and Batman costumes and you know, constantly doing that. We just, you know, they're all different kinds mm-hmm. of phases depending on what focus the particular group of writers have. Well, I know Bobby Moynihan is really into Star Wars and stuff like that, and he really kind of pushed. We used to do lots of Star Wars sketches, and when those movies came back, we did lots of spoofs of Star Wars movies.
Well, we got and you know it's kind of what's going on in the country, and right now we're in this
right.
You know, this super spreading event that we had last week, and these, you know, mm-hmm. with the COVID, and then, you know, it's just a lot of material out there.
It's a lot of material out there, and it must be challenging for them because it's a lot of material, but it's not the kind of material we're used to getting hit with and trying to find a way to make it funny.
Right.
Usually we're spoofing the latest big hit movies. Well, there are no latest big hit movies. The theaters, there are no new movies being released, really. So there's nothing that's big enough that Saturday Night would go, oh, we're going to spoof that because everyone will get it.
Right.
You know, everyone saw the new Star Wars movies or the new Avengers movies or whatever, so we would spoof those. We don't have that to spoof. And how do you really spoof, no matter how irreverent we are, you know, and Saturday Night Live is pretty irreverent, you know. I mean, as someone said, a friend of mine was a big Trump supporter, and we were talking about SNL, and he said, oh, you know, you guys really, really are hard on him. And I said, hard on him? We're hard on everybody. We were horrible to Bill Clinton. We ripped Bill Clinton. You know, I mean, according to us, Bill Clinton, there was
Bush. Bush got it pretty bad.
Bush got it really bad. Yeah. Although I have to say, you know, who did Bush, the tall guy who's great and hysterical, and his name's just popped out of my head only because I'm half senile.
That's all right. It'll come.
You know, who did George W. And
I thought that the guy that did the more cowbell did George Bush.
Yeah. That's who. That's
Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell. Yes.
Yeah, Will Ferrell. Yeah,
and
was great.
He was great Bush. Yeah. And you know, way out there, but not. But in a weirdly loving kind of way, he was kind of turned Bush into this lovable doofus. And but anyway, my point
is it's all
is
eyebrows.
That, yeah, yeah. And you know, really pushing the accent and the you know, kind of the dumbness and stuff like that. But I said, you know, we don't, everybody is we go after everybody, you know. I mean, it's always the people that are.
Some make it a little easier.
Some make it a little easier. Yeah, exactly. And, some make it a little
Trump,
easier.
Trump is, he makes it
he
very,
makes it so
very easy.
Easy. He makes it so easy. For instance, we had several people do Obama. And Obama was harder just because Obama is, he's a good speaker. He has a beautiful voice. He never gets crazy. So they tried to, the angle they took with Obama was that, oh, he's a little pedantic and dull.
Right.
And that's
or
kind
the
of
ears.
The, yeah, yeah. Or the look or something. Yeah. So that's kind of all they could really get him on, because he didn't, you know, these other guys are like, oh, come on, you're just making it too easy.
Well, and that fly, that's Saturday Night Live Gold right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
I bet, I don't know who watches or who's involved in the writing, but I'm sure when whoever that person is, when that fly hit that white hair, they probably went,
oh, absolutely.
Boom.
Hit the white hair and stayed
and
for
stayed.
Like 3 minutes.
I couldn't, I had
just
to change
stayed
it.
Stayed there.
I couldn't watch it.
The I know.
Fly
I know.
Was
the
too
fly
much.
Was just too much. And with, you know, with Pence dripping with insincerity and a fly on his head, the two combination was just too much.
Well, and Trump, he doesn't, you know, he puts out a lot of potential.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Just his,
he is like, he is just handing, he's got a big silver platter.
Yeah.
He puts it all out on the silver platter and then hands it to the writers.
Yeah.
You know,
it's crazy.
Although, you know, it's one thing that I don't know if anyone else has observed this, and I've observed it, and it could be that because of what I do, I'm focused on, I'm really visual, you know, being in wardrobe and stuff. I'm always, you know, I lived my whole life there staring at Daryl's tie, you know, making sure the tie was perfect, the knot was perfect, it was not too tight, it wasn't too loose, there was no gap at the top, you couldn't begin to see the button, it has to be, it's not a little over to the side, it has to be perfect. And so all of us there that have all, and almost all of us have been dressed, you know, we go back and forth between I spent most of my years spending Thursday and Friday and the beginning of Saturday getting the show ready, building things, altering clothes. And then all day Saturday, I was a dresser. But I noticed that Alec Baldwin started out doing Trump, and the wigs were lemon yellow and really like Trump's hair. You know, there was like a shelf on one side hanging over, you know, from where the swoop goes around.
Yep.
And they'll probably, Secret Service will probably show up at my door for talking about this. But at the beginning, he wore padding.
Padding in his...
He had a big stomach pad and a big rear end pad to play Trump. Because...
he wasn't
that's
padded.
What Trump looks like. We were making Daryl look, our Alec look like Trump, and Alec wanted the padding. I mean, we mostly do a lot of those things are what the designer wants. But when you have somebody like Alec Baldwin or something like that, if he says I want to wear padding, then we go, oh, okay. What size padding do you want? My point is, I've been noticing lately, even before we left. Because of COVID, suddenly the padding is gone. Alec is looking more normal. You know, Alec is dressed as Alec. The suits have been taken in a little bit to fit Alec. The hair, if you look at it the next time.
It wasn't
again,
good the other day.
Well, it's normalized. It's not as lemon yellow as Trump's hair really is.
Right.
It's not as swoopy and weird as Trump's hair really is. It's much beigier, more normal. It looks more like normal hair. And I'm not being in a position to talk to any of the writers or talk to anybody. Even when I was there, I wasn't really in a position to say, obviously, this is a conscious choice. Somebody has decided, for whatever reason, and it could be just that they don't want to be accused of trying to make Trump look like a clown. That could very well be the reason. But the reality is that Alec's visual look as Trump has changed.
Well,
it has been more normalized.
So I just saw that this weekend, and his hair was definitely different. Because then I saw Jimmy Fallon impersonation, because Jimmy Fallon does a great one on his show.
Right, right.
And it's that lemon yellow hair.
Big wave. With the big jelly roll wave.
The lips.
Yeah.
The lips.
Yeah. Now, Alec still does, although it seems to me, this could just be me, it seems to me that even Alec's facial grimaces and everything have been toned down. I'm just wondering if for some reason from the top, they've said we need to tone this all down. And it could be that they just don't want to be accused.
Is there a conspiracy, you think?
Conspiracy? Doubt it. I think
it's just been a private conversation, you know? Let's tone it down, guys.
I believe it looks to me, it definitely looks to me like it's toned down. This is a relatively subtle thing, and I'm noticing it as a costume person who has been watching, who's, you know, part of the show that's been watching it for the whole time Alec's been doing Trump. Well, so it's a subtle thing. And I can understand on some level they might just have said, folks, it's getting too cartoony. Let's rein it back in. And everything, Saturday Night Live, as every show does, walks a fine line between trying to be funny and yet trying to also not be so ridiculous that they're not taken seriously anymore.
Well, it's usually, you know, with anybody, I think you probably have one characteristic that you can really, like with Bush, it was the eyebrows.
Right.
With Clinton,
right,
it was that thumb. Remember? But with Trump, you've got his hair, you've got his lips, you've got his color, you've got his suit, you've got all these different things. So
you've got his weight, his girth.
He doesn't really, to me, come off as a person. I mean, he's clearly not svelte.
He wears those very baggy suits that it's almost like a little mousy tongue uniform.
Yeah.
He is never out of that navy blue suit. You open his closet and he probably has 50 identical navy blue suits in there, and that's all he's got, you know. When you see those shots that you rarely see of him playing tennis, which I don't think he really does anymore, that was like earlier, you realize, and you know him in a pair of white shorts, you realize, oh, he looks different. Then I'm seeing a whole new thing I'm seeing a whole new thing that I see in that baggy navy blue suit.
Did you ever watch The West Wing?
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah.
So did you see? I think it is a little change of subject, I guess, a little bit.
Why not?
So I think it's the 15th. So what's today? 13th, 12th, 13th, 14th. So maybe Wednesday or Thursday, they're bringing back West Wing.
Oh, the original.
They're bringing it. Well, they're bringing back for one episode, but it's the original cast.
Oh, they're doing a new episode of the West Wing. Oh, I didn't realize that. Oh, yeah, I had heard something about that. That's fascinating.
I love the West Wing.
Yeah, the West Wing was brilliant.
Love the West Wing, and so very excited. But I think that they may be doing it in a theater.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I think they're redoing the episode where, and I think it's the one, and if you're familiar with the show, then you'll know what I'm talking about, but I think it's the one where the president, where Toby confronts the president about his MS. Remember that episode?
Yeah, I kind of do, yeah.
Sorry, Toby, if I didn't put you on the list of people, you know, it's like this, but it's a pretty powerful episode. I think that's the episode. This is what I'm guessing.
They're not shooting a new episode with the cast of, they're kind of just re-showing that original episode?
No, they're re-shooting that episode with the cast of today.
Oh.
I'm not sure if it's that episode. It's an episode. They're reshooting a previous episode of The West Wing with the cast current. The current cast.
So they're all going to be 15 years older than they were when they did the
Well, The West Wing was 19 years ago.
19 years.
Yeah.
I was almost going to say 20 years, and then I thought, no, it can't be that long.
It but is that old, which is surprising.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The cast will be Josh, Leo. No, Leo. So Leo passed away. So there's another guy, Sterling is going to play the role of Leo. Mm-hmm. And I think it's actually an African-American guy. So that'll be interesting. But Josh is back.
Allison Janney,
that
would be back.
Yep. Toby's back. Donna Moss is coming back. Who was the president's? Charlie is coming back.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'm excited. I think it's Wednesday. And it's going to be shown live. I think it's going to be in the theater. So,
oh, cool.
But if you're a fan of The West Wing, tune in. And it's on HBO Max.
HBO Max. Okay.
So clearly HBO Max needs some sunshine. So they're
going
to do that.
Right.
They're going to do that on there. But what made me think about it is it's going to be shot, I think, in a theater. It reminds me of New York. My brother-in-law, he's not really my brother-in-law, call him that. My father-in-law told me last night that it looks like they're not going to open Broadway up until like June.
June of next year. Yeah. I heard that.
Weird.
What's interesting, it is weird. It's that whole, you have to give New York credit because New York was, right off the bat, New York was the big COVID hotspot. I mean, we had like, just in New York had 30,000 deaths.
Yeah.
Just, it was like a science fiction movie, for months there.
Well, New York is like a science fiction movie.
New York is a science fiction movie.
Because how many people live in that damn city.
Yeah.
And we don't even have an idea.
Not only how many people live in that city, everybody that flies in from Europe or China or Asia or any place, they don't fly into Oshkosh. They fly into New York
for the
most part. You know, some may eventually go from New York to Chicago or they might fly in from... they might fly in and go to L.A., but that's why these are the cities that get this stuff, because these are the entry points to our country, and that's where most people come. So that's why New York got it the worst. And also, we weren't told about any of this stuff. They were kind of soft-pedaling it, so nobody knew. And I remember doing shows in January and February and March, and we were doing comedy sketches about COVID,
mm-hmm.
Thinking, everybody's worried about it, sort of. But I remember I made a mask for Rachel Dratch. We did a Debbie Downer sketch all about, COVID. All about people worrying about COVID. And I made this crazy, ridiculous mask that she was at a wedding wearing this mask, and everyone was making fun of her for wearing a mask. And, and this was March.
Yeah.
And already, we thought, oh, this is just the flu, only a little bit worse. That's all any of us thought, because that's all any of us were told.
Well, and I think that was also getting back to our president, that's the message he was kind of putting out there.
That's the message he wanted. He didn't want going into this election for people to worry about this. And he, on some level, just believed that, as he's kept saying, he keeps saying, oh, it'd be like a miracle. It'll go away.
Disappear.
Well, and he's right.
It's going to disappear.
It's going to disappear. But the point is not that it's going to disappear someday. It will disappear someday. It could be another 2 years from now, and a million people could be dead.
Well, and it's never going to disappear.
The point is that it will eventually morph into something else, and it will be just like the flu does every year. The flu comes back every year, but every year it's a little different, which is why we always need new shots.
Right.
And COVID will disappear at one point, but the whole point is not that COVID will disappear someday. The point is, how are we handling it now so that we don't lose the people that we could potentially lose?
Right.
And that was the whole point. If they had just simply, for whatever reason, just simply said, you know, we need to take this seriously in January, when they saw that it was first coming out, and it was, and Trump himself said, oh, I knew it was serious. I knew people were just breathing and dying, but I don't want to scare anybody. And, well, if he just scared some people, many more of us might still be here, you know.
Do you think that, well, actually, you know what, that's a whole lot of wonder.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not even important. We're, you yeah. know,
we are where we are now.
We are where we are, and thank God that, you know, I do feel like it, hopefully it's getting better. I don't know. I feel like it's kind of maybe a second wave coming.
Yeah, seems well, to be they're the saying, pulse right you know, now. Unfortunately, that the whole thing created this weird, as they've said, you know, this should not be, there's nothing political about this. It shouldn't be just wearing masks and being careful. It's not that big a deal. And if it had been normalized from the beginning, from the top, they're saying that there's a good chance we would just not have lost quite as many people if everyone had just been, where of course it's a disease that's here and we have to deal with it and it's going to take people. But, you know, now we've created this thing where their whole huge, like half the country believes it's a hoax and are resentful of wearing masks. And if we'd just somehow been able to get everyone to the point where they felt like, okay, masks are a big pain in the ass, but, you know, hey, it's not that big a deal. I'll just do it.
Well, I just talked to a guy yesterday or 2 days ago who told me that he was in Florida for 4 days and nobody's wearing masks in Florida.
Yeah. And it's
at all.
Yeah. It's all part of that. It's so that's all part of that.
It's slightly
subculture
political.
It's part of that subculture of that's just been created that, you know, that, oh, I'm not having my rights stepped on. And I think it's, you know, what kills me always is that, you know, they don't believe that wearing masks helps. But I think half of these people believe that the earth is flat and Sasquatch is real, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like, what are you going to do?
5 shows and then you go back. Are you, so do you think you'll go back? Or are you?
Well, I'm kind of waiting to see what happens with the whole COVID thing. A friend of mine from the show that I'm in touch with, matter of fact, if my phone's on the fridge, I'd show you. She texted me on Thursday a picture of 2 of our fly costumes on dress forms and said,
Biden.
Guess what we're doing? And I thought, I know what we're doing. And part of it was that I had made the fly legs. She also texted, she said, I really miss you, but I'm glad you're not here.
Right. I understand.
And another friend of mine had been watching the show and said, how are they? They're doing sketches and there's a lot, and you're not seeing anybody in masks. You know, the actors are right there together doing, you know, doing their sketches and stuff. And I said, well, I know that they're being serious about this whole thing. I mean, I know they are. I have a feeling that on a certain level, what they're probably doing with the cast that have to be right there, they don't want them just all wearing masks through every one of these sketches. I think they're probably testing them every day. They may be testing them a couple times a day. They may be, you know, telling them, making sure that they're just doing nothing but being there at the studio and then quarantining at home. I mean, while we're doing a show, they're there for 14, 16 hours a day. They go home, sleep. Sometimes they just sleep right there in the studio and they don't leave the studio the whole time the show is.
It's like a little Saturday Night Live bubble.
It's like a Saturday Night Live bubble to a certain extent. So I have a feeling they're being pretty strict about that, and that's why they're being able to be a little, push the envelope a little more. You know, people are together next to each other speaking and talking and singing and sketches, I think isn't just them being irresponsible. I'm sure that what they're doing is lots of testing. I'm sure they're doing lots of making sure that that when they're not there, they're not out carousing, they're not out partying.
Well, and the other, it seems stuff. Like it used to be like you caught COVID and that was the kiss of death. And now it's like, you know, oh, yeah. I got COVID. I'll be back in 10 days and we'll see you then. You're like, oh, wow.
Well, that's because we've gotten so normalized. We're still having like 1,000 deaths a day. You know, we're just used to it now. So back when
Chris Christie got it, you would think he'd have been a candidate for a struggle. And he was...
Well, I'm... personally think like, you know, there he made a statement saying he was in the hospital for a week. Right. He made a statement saying, oh, I'm just all great now. I'm better. And I my whole thing is the truth is in the middle somewhere. Right. You know, we tend to think this country likes to live in the black and white, you know. Oh, no, either the aliens are here to take us to Mars or everything is fine and there is no COVID. So I think he's probably, you know, not terminal, but I have a feeling he's probably not as
sure not public.
Cool and groovy as, you know, they'd all like us to think. So, you know, who knows? For whatever reason, it seems to, and that's the scary thing, is that there are 19-year-olds that are dying. You know, there are healthy 19-year-olds that are dying. There are... a lot of people still dying. We still don't understand why these people are living and these people are getting it and dying. And it's a brand new thing. They're still figuring all this out, you know. So who knows?
Well, listen, it's been, I love having you on the podcast. I think you're so interesting. I think you're a great client. You become a nice friend. So it's fun to have these chats with you, but you know, I hope that, you know, I think this obviously is making a lot of people, forcing a lot of people's hands. If they're close to retirement, they're taking it.
Right, right.
You know, we want you to be safe, but, you know, I love it. I love when you are back up there and whether you go back or not. Hopefully, you know, it turns out it's safe enough for you and you do go back because I think you enjoy it because every time we talk about you're very passionate and I can see it in your eyes.
I do. Well, and it's really a family and... so it's not so like, I was there for 29 years. So that's nothing that you do that for 29 years and you get used to it.
Get used to it.
It's fine. This a quick story. I don't know why this popped into my head, but I remember one of the very, very first shows I worked on there, the host was Dolly Parton.
Oh, wow.
And this was like, you know, I start working on the show, and I remember them saying, okay, we're doing a sketch where these astronauts land on a planet that's all women. And the women's eyes have, over generations, the women's eyes have moved down to the fronts of their breasts because men stared at their breasts so long that eventually they just evolved to have eyes in their breasts. So we had to make 3 fake sets of breasts, including one for Dolly Parton, with eyes in them, but they wanted the eyes to blink and look side to side. So in 3 days, and this was just one of all our sketches, in 3 days we had to we had tech people figuring this out, and we had made these, you know, animatronic breasts with eyes in them, with eyelashes and eyelids that blinked, and the eyes and the actresses. There was a line that went down one arm and went into their hand, and there was a remote control thing in one hand that made the eyes blink.
Okay.
And another line that went around and went down into their hand, and the other remote control made the eyes move back and forth.
Oh, wow.
And then we had to build costumes around space costumes, you know, like 60s. Kind of funky space costumes to go around and fit these. And then
a picture of this.
There must be a picture of it somewhere. And then all the girls wore like, you know, spacey visor sunglasses as though their eyes weren't there anymore. And it was hysterical. And their lines were like, you know, don't look up here. My eyes are down here.
I'm just going to throw SNL boob eyes. Let's see
if something comes up. I said, like, this was in like 1991, 92, and just to kind of show
them. Were they in red?
They may have been, I can't remember the color of what the costumes look. That's them. Yeah, you found a picture of it.
I see it. And they wink.
And they wink and the eyes move back and forth.
That is so funny.
And, you know, that's just to kind of show a trajectory of where we've come from and, you know, the very earnest stuff that we do.
Well, I love Saturday Night Live, and I the whole point of what I was saying that I saw this weekend, it was funny.
Yeah, and oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's been times it hasn't been that funny.
Well, as and I always say to people.
It feels good to see that. I, you know, because we don't, that's a, it's a, it's an icon, right? It's what.
Oh, it's totally an icon. So, and it is such a well-oiled machine. It is, they have, we have all done this so long that even, you know, even normally we have like a 3.5 month break from our last show in May to our first show the end of September. And people come back to that first show the end of September, and it starts up instantaneously as though no one ever left. Mm. It's everyone's there. Enough people are always back that it just flows. This show is gigantic. And yeah. I think I said something last time. People don't realize that we do a much bigger show than anything you end up seeing. We do an 8 o'clock dress rehearsal, and the show is usually over 2 hours long.
Right. And it's shot then, twice, right?
Yeah. We shoot the 8 o'clock show with an audience. I mean, the old days, there's still a little bit of an audience there now.
There was an audience being, there this weekend.
There was an audience. They're all wearing masks. They're being careful. What you see the people on the floor, you tend to, and they're probably making a point of not really shooting the bleachers where the majority of the audience sits.
I saw the people that were upstairs.
There were a few people up there. A lot of those, I think they're filling in with our tech people.
Okay.
Who are there to want kind of just, there's now room for them to sit and watch
friends.
The show. Family and friends. But, you know, the show is just this well-oiled machine. And as I always say to people, because I'm, you know, the first thing that everybody usually says 90% of the time, if it comes out that, you know, I work at SNL, then the first thing people usually say is, oh, you know, it's not as funny as it used to be.
Yeah.
And I always say, well, I don't write it, so, you know.
Well, I'm not as drunk as I used to be either.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not always, as high as I used to be.
Yeah, and I always say, well, you know, the other thing is that the show appeals to people with a certain kind of sense of humor. And so there are always going to be people that just don't find this funny, or they just are a little too sensitive and they get put off by something. But the other thing I think of is, I think what usually happens if somebody doesn't really latch into the cold open or they don't latch into the monologue, then they kind of are like, oh, I don't like the show, and they turn it off. And there might be some really fantastic sketches that come later in the show that they're now missing. And because my point is that I've always found that even shows that we all kind of go, oh, that was kind of a stinker, that really did, you know, or this host... they're always looking for new hosts, and not every host gets it. There are people that just are naturals, and they're hysterical, like Justin Timberlake. Just is a natural.
Bill Burr was funny.
Yeah, Bill Burr was funny. There are other people who are phenomenal performers, but this just is not for them. They don't get the live thing. They don't get reading the cue cards. They can't. They're used to rehearsing more. They're not used to being funny. There are a lot of things, but the main thing I want to say is that I always want to tell people, you know, I know it's hard. And if you've watched a sketch and you're really like, oh, I don't like that, that wasn't funny at all, and then they turn the show off, I always want to say, you know, the next sketch you might find hysterical. And there's always, even in the worst show, there's always like elements. Update is great, or there's a sketch toward the end that's hysterical, or there's always something in the show that really works. But people will like decide early on, oh, I don't like it, I'm turning it off. And then they miss something. So that's kind of the brilliance of it, that they crank out this stuff, and it's not all golden, but there's often really good stuff in there.
For me, Saturday Night Live came at a point in my life where when I really loved the show was when I was really into music. And Saturday Night Live has always been a great source. And my buddy Carlos and I, we chat about this all the time. You know, there was a time like in the 90s, there wasn't a lot of, you had MTV and you had the radio.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And you had Saturday Night Live. And I mean, the Smashing Pumpkins, Pearl Jam, all these great bands were on Saturday Night Live. I'll take whatever I get on the show, but the reason I taped it was to see what band was going to play.
Sure,
and then if I got some funny stuff in there, then that was great, but it was always about the music.
Right, right.
I think that's still about that. The problem is today is we have so many sources of things now.
Right, right.
You know, I've always said like my love for Pearl Jam was because it was like going after the beautiful girl that was hard to get.
Right, right.
They're not hard to get anymore. And I don't mean girls, but I mean anything that I love.
Yeah.
Whether it was like this Pearl Jam or, you know, Smashing Pumpkins.
Right.
You know, for me to get more of that, I would have to literally go to a music store and look through records or find maybe something used. But that was my source. I just go to YouTube. I mean, I can basically indulge, gorge myself with whatever I'm loving now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's true. And that's what makes it hard for, I think, every single person producing any kind of entertainment now.
Right.
Whether it's music, whether it's movies, whether it's TV shows, comedy shows, whatever it is. And it's not like toilet paper where something happens, we use it, and that's gone, and we need a new piece, you know, because the old one is gone. Every piece of entertainment these days that's being produced remains accessible for the most part.
Yeah.
So the library just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. We get more and more to choose from. And there are studies that show that most people, if you're given more than three choices of something, our heads explode, you know.
Well, it's the buffet problem.
Right, right.
You know, if you show up and you got, you know, one big metal pan of shredded beef and you're making tacos and that's what you get, then, I bet they're delicious. But when you fill a room with pans of shredded beef and shredded chicken and shredded pork.
Exactly. And suddenly your choices go up to a million choices.
We get very critical of shit. And
well, that's why all of us, you know, most people, you go to a restaurant and the menu is huge. Most people complain. It's like, you know, I can't figure out, this is a 5-page menu. I can't pick something to eat, you know.
That's right.
That's why restaurants kind of like tone it down to just enough of a choice that you feel like you have lots of choices, but not so many that you just become unable to pick something.
Well, the thing that differentiated Saturday Night Live from everything else was that the music was live.
Right, right.
Or is live. I shouldn't
is
say
live.
We're talking
it
like
live,
it died or something. And
yeah,
the music's live.
Yeah.
And you're not going to find that anywhere else.
Yeah. I mean, hence the Sinead O'Connor thing. Yeah. You know, I was there for that.
What did she do? I don't remember.
Don't you remember? She. It was a big deal at the time. It's funny. I think to some people it's still a big deal. Being an Irish, you know, performer and being a feeling that the Catholic Church was very oppressive to the Irish. She live on TV at the end of her song held up a picture of the Pope and ripped it in half.
I saw
and
it.
That was a huge deal. And what people, I don't know if people realized it, because, you know, we did that. She rehearsed that song. We did the song for the 8 o'clock show. In the rehearsal, she held up a picture of a completely innocuous picture and ripped it. And we kind of all thought, what was that? I don't know. Well, must be some weird artistic thing. Who knows? It's fine. 8 o'clock show. She held up a picture of something innocuous, you know, a picture of a dandelion or something. I can't remember what it was a picture of. It was just, you know, no big deal. Ripped it so that when she got to that point in the live show, she pulled a picture out. No one, and I think she had even asked that they kind of zoom in on her, and pulled the picture out, zoomed in on her, held it up. We saw it was the Pope, and she ripped it, and before anyone could really do anything, that it was out in the universe.
What would you have done?
They would have put, if they had smelled that that was going to happen, they would have put a 3-second delay on the, probably, I'm guessing, they would have probably put a 3-second delay on it and cut it off quickly, so, or blurred it out just to not offend the Catholic
watchers. So did, was there any repercussions from that?
Yeah, there were. I think she was kind of banned from the show. I think people were screaming about it for a while.
But we're fine.
But we're fine now.
We're fine.
I think if it happened now, I think people are a little more like, oh, that was kind of disrespectful, and but, you know, my hair isn't on fire. But, you know, but back then it was a touchy enough subject that people's hair did catch fire, and they ran around. And
we were so sensitive back then.
I know we were so, and we're just so jaded now. So.
Well, listen, brother, I gotta shut it down. We've been going. Thank you again.
Oh, you're welcome.
I'm going to keep asking you to come back.
Absolutely.
I love having you on.
I don't know how often I'll have new stuff to talk about. But
doesn't matter.
Oh, good.
It's just
okay.
A chat.
Okay,
it's
that's
just
true.
Fun
it
chatting.
It is.
Listen, have a great day. Enjoy the rainy weather. And
I will.
I definitely
you
hope you go back. But if you don't, I understand.
I will.
30 years is a lot of information. We could still pick
it's
through.
It's a lot of it. It's a lot of information. You know, I'm. They've been great about saying, let's be loosey-goosey and see what happens. And if you want to come back, you can come back. And I'm totally aware that things change and that there might be reasons that changes. You know, like they'd...
Stealing your picture.
Oh, go ahead.
Gotcha.
That they might say, oh, gee, we the budgets have changed. You know, the show has just... And, you know, we... So who knows? Who knows? I'm, you know.
Well, I'm rooting that you go back.
Well, I am too. I have to say, I've, you know, done it a long time. It's hugely fun. The people are amazing, and it really is like, you know, home away from home.
Well, maybe if you don't go back, our next time I'll have you on, we'll talk about what retirement's like.
Oh, that'll be fascinating.
Well, Doug James, I appreciate it, buddy. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Have a great day.
You too.
All right, bud.
Bye.
Bye.